Welcome to Syntax. In this Monday Hasty Treat, we're going to be talking about using our coding powers for fun. In our own little scripts, coding for your coworkers. The types of things that you can take your abilities to simplify other people's lives or processes or whatever, just because you have the superpower of writing code. My name is Scott Tolinsky. I'm a developer from Denver. And with me, as always, is Wes Boss.
Hey. Yeah. So we have an editor now, Randy, and he is doing all the producing and exporting of the video and editing it all together and writing all the show notes and stuff. And he's got lots of processes, right? And some of those parts are like he hit little issues or things can be sped up in a certain way. So we've been writing little scripts here and there to sort of help him out. And I thought like this is kind of an interesting show because like even as like a video editor, no matter how good you are at your tools, you can certainly improve either the speed at which you do things or the accuracy at which you do things when you can add scripting and process improvements into that flow. So I thought we would just kind of talk about a couple examples of things that you can do and talk about how do you actually write these things and hand them off to people who need to do them.
Yeah. And, you know, they can even help you out. They could be a good introduction to getting into programming in a more practical way if you're the type of person who's just trying to break in. Maybe you're working a job right now that isn't a programming job. Potentially, it's a cool use to get to practice your programming skills while accomplishing tasks you need to do for work to potentially dive into some of this stuff as a life hack to both gain experience, but also speed up your workflow so you can spend time doing, you know, things you want to be doing instead of the mundane tasks of your life. But let's talk about mundane tasks like solving bugs. I have to solve quite a bit of bugs in my life because I create quite a bit of bugs, and I like to solve them using a tool called Sentry. This podcast is presented by Sentry, and you know what? Sentry does such a good job of finding any kind of little issue you might have in the site. It presents it in a way that you can find it, fix it, know what's going on, and then track, make sure it doesn't happen again. And recently, I've been noticing, Wes, the issues on Sentry that have existed for a long time just kind of show up in GitHub. And that's pretty neat, right? You can attach errors directly to a GitHub issue, track it there, assign it to other people, mark it as solved, and move on. So if you want to check out Sentry, head on over to sentry.io/syntax, and you'll get 2 months for free.
All right, let's talk about the first one, which is, we'll say, the problem that Randy had. So we are doing a podcast now that is both video and in audio. So the process is that Randy edits the whole video podcast, and then he puts the chapter markers into the video and exports that as a MP4. And the way that chapter markers work in he uses DaVinci Resolve is that it just embeds them into the actual file. There's this really handy tool called FFProbe. It's part of FFmpeg. Mm-hmm. And if you ever just type FFProbe and give it a file, it will tell you all the information about that specific video file. And in fact, when Randy came over here, we were testing out, I think, about 5 different recording softwares to see like what are the bit rates, what are the frame rates, like all of that information of like who's actually giving us the best quality video out the other end at the end of the day. So I just do FFProbe and it dumps all the info. He's like, man, like amazing that you can just you could just do this kind of stuff, which is really cool. So he does that with video, but then when we converted it, we export as an MP3 from Resolve, it was stripping the markers. There's no way to export an MP3 with embedded chapters, which is, of course, all the podcast apps need that to give an audio chapter. So I was just like, all right, well, let me see what we can do. And I just FFmpeg.
Crack the knuckles.
Yeah. And it kicked out the chapters in like 2 seconds. And I was like, oh, damn, like that was really handy. So we just put together a little script that would do that, as well as one thing I'm working on is also just scaffold out all the chapters into the markdown file because he has to write the show notes as well. And just like that kind of stuff, like even if it takes them 15 minutes, like that's 15 minutes that you can spend on doing something else. So FFmpeg is just like, we might even do a whole different show on FFmpeg, but it's amazing, that tool, of everything that it possibly does. And it always just works.
Yeah. I was getting deep into writing my own video capture service, and I was using actual raw frames, which are massive. And it's amazing how you could pipe in like a stream into FFmpeg, and as long as you can navigate the kind of stuff you're doing, FFmpeg isn't the problem. It can chug through anything and spit out a video. So I was so impressed once I started getting deeper into FFmpeg land. I've almost always just used it via a UI, drop in a video to re-encode it or any of that stuff. But man, it's totally an accessible project. And if one thing's made FFmpeg more accessible than anything else, it's ChatGPT, because you can ask all sorts of questions about it. So
it's true. Like Randy was like Googling for little commands to run it. Like he's like, oh, like let me try compress the MP3 a little bit much. We don't need the bitrate for just spoken word. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, just use ChatGPT and it'll kick out you just tell it what you want it to do and it'll kick out the actual crazy long FFmpeg command for you. And it's amazing. It almost works every single time.
Yeah, amazing. Let's talk about some other cool stuff. So one thing that, you know, we really needed to do was to make sure that our shows, which are authored in Markdown, fit a very specific format, because Markdown is definitely a developer's tool, right? And oftentimes we ask non-developers to work in Markdown, and that's not always a great thing. But one thing that we needed to do is to be able to essentially validate that Markdown. Now, granted, we threw this in a GitHub action. The GitHub action is essentially running this script to check a number of things with the Markdown. But to be able to essentially take it in a file input and verify that, one of the things that it does is it checks every link to make sure that the links resolve. Therefore, we won't get any broken links. It already found a video or a podcast file that it was set to, like, you know, make public, unpublish.
It wasn't publicly available.
Yeah, it was set to private. And therefore, the script was failing. And I was like, oh, I messed up part of the script. No, the script was finding the broken link just fine.
It worked.
Yeah, it worked. I was like, okay, why is this link broken? It shouldn't be broken. It exists. No, the link was actually broken. And so you can use these types of things to do any of your tasks, any of your bidding, right? You have a very specific format or very specific thing you have anybody in your life needing to edit or work in, you can write code to validate that.
Yeah. Anytime you have a process where the steps must be done perfectly and you hopefully shouldn't miss something, that, like, many times in the past we've not broken the site, but like we have a broken build because there's a missing dash somewhere, or like on the old website we couldn't put colons into the show titles because the show title was in front matter, and like so many of these little things that, like, you shouldn't have to rely on a human catching every single thing, right? You should be able to write some sort of script that will put those safeguards in place that will sort of catch them for you. Because I thought it was hilarious, because on the show in the past, we've said, don't give your clients Markdown, you know?
Yeah.
Like, my blog's in Markdown, but I don't think I would ever hand off Markdown to an actual client. And we gave it to Randy and say, hey, you got to learn Markdown. And like, there's so many things that could potentially go wrong when you're writing Markdown. So it's nice to have all those validation steps in place now.
Yeah. Welcome to the Developer Podcast, where we make you author the show notes in Markdown.
One kind of interesting idea. I'm just going to pitch this to you, Scott. And it's also probably worth talking to Randy about to see if this would be handy as well. Is our process right now for the transcript and the AI show notes on the podcast is the editor edits the thing. The editor writes our own show notes and then publishes it. And once it's public, we run that, we get a transcript for it, and we get a whole bunch of AI show notes for it, meaning that we ask it to summarize the major talking points. And they're really good. Like Matt Pocock on Twitter was asking about, when would you use Axios over just built-in fetch? And I just screenshotted the AI summary of all of the bullet points from that episode. And it was like the perfect, like, you don't even have to listen to the episode. You just read that list of bullet points and you kind of get a good idea of what's going on. And I was like, if those are so good, why don't we do do a first run of the show notes? The
show notes, yeah.
With first get the transcript, because it can be easier to edit video if you can cut it at a specific word, like, or you can search for where did he talk about X, Y, and Z? And second, DaVinci Resolve has an API which you can programmatically embed markers, or you can, I think it's like an ETL file, you can import markers from specific timestamps. And I was like, well, if we did like a first pass of get the transcript and then get the major bullet points, immediately put those into Resolve. And obviously, like, he's a human, he can take it a little bit further and change it and rename things. But like, wouldn't that be like a little bit of a head start to get a little bit more context for the video to embed it? Wouldn't that be cool? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. And one thing I think it fits this conversation very well is it's taking something that is a more in-depth technical process. Randy's got to sit down. He's got to, you know, he says he listens to the episodes tons of times. So he's got to take one of those, at least one of those listens to put together like final usable show notes. Like, what if you could get a head start on that or a really good foundation? That frees him up to do so many more important tasks that, you know, he's got enough stuff to do.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that writing the show notes is the most fun of the tasks in terms that we're tasking him with, right?
So if we could scaffold them out, and like ideally at the end of the day, we would just have like the AI show notes and the human written show notes will be some sort of morph together type of thing. And like, and another thing we do is every single show, we have to figure out what are good clips from that specific episode. And there's lots of AI clip generation things, or you can give it a transcript and say, hey, give me points. And they're not all that good. But Scott asked me to pull a whole bunch of clips out the other day. And what I did is I just took the transcript, I put it into Claude, and I just gave it the prompt that says, give me the topics. And then maybe even give me some, like, I was like, give me some interesting points, give me some funny points. And then just from all of that data, I was able to say, okay, well, I've listened to the podcast because I was on it, and I have a good idea of where in the episode these things were talked about. That made it so much faster because I didn't have to just sit there and listen to the whole thing again to scrub and find the parts. I could just visually see where they were. So I think, like, I think we still have to do the transcript and the AI show notes after it's all edited. But I think if we also do it on the raw value, I think you could get a lot of value out of that.
Yeah. You know, one thing I think about too in this space is that I'm working on a YouTube find and replace tool. There's these that exist at TubeBuddy. They're expensive, but I started working on one myself, and it turns out it's relatively simple if you know the YouTube API. You just, I'm pulling in every episode of Syntax we have ever, or every YouTube video that was formerly Level Up Tutorials ever. I'm throwing them in a SQLite database. I'm doing the find and doing the replace locally, and then I'm pushing up via the IDs and the changes descriptions. You could do a find and replace over 2,000 YouTube videos and descriptions. Well, what if in that process we were able to write YouTube descriptions as well? I mean, we would be able to automate AI YouTube descriptions directly from our video. That seems really cool.
Yeah.
Cool avenue to explore, right?
Oh, it's true. Yeah, you could do quite a bit with that. And like, sometimes now I'm frustrated where you're on a YouTube video and there's not chapters in it. And I got, you think, like, come on, YouTube, like, if someone doesn't provide chapters, at least find it out. Like Google search does that. If you search and the answer is in a video, it will try to link you to where in that video the thing is answered. And it's pretty decent. So obviously they have that information.
I think there is some AI chapter features coming in YouTube. I saw some beta something for that, but
yeah. Oh, awesome.
Let's talk about like what types of scripts you can do, because we've just kind of been pontificating about stuff that we have done, and we can get back into some more examples as well. But what are some ways that you've run some of these scripts? One of the ways that I've written scripts is I took it as an opportunity to learn Rust a little bit. I hacked together a script in Rust, and then I was able to output it as a straight-up executable. Anybody can run an executable, right? You can even choose to run that from other means. Or I've done little scripts as Raycast extensions, where Raycast is essentially just going off and hitting a script. You know, we were doing a Level Up Tutorials newsletter. I, being myself, would frequently forget to put in, you know, tasty clicks or whatever we had for the Level Up Tutorials version of the newsletter. If I saw stuff, I would bookmark it and then lose it. So what I did is I wrote a Raycast extension that just took what was ever in my clipboard and put it onto the list. And then Caitlin would have that for whenever she was publishing the newsletter. So for me, that was like a huge productivity boost for both of us, because I automated that thing that would always be plaguing me, and it made it much easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's giving it to somebody who is not a developer is always a tricky thing to do, because you have to bundle it up into some easy way. Otherwise, if it's like we all know the overbearing technical person who's like, well, why are you doing it that way? I could make it so much easier if I give you these 11 things. And then like they're not actually going to use that because it's too complicated. It doesn't actually fit into their workflow. It breaks halfway through, you know? Mm-hmm. So with Randy, I wrote a perfect example. It didn't actually work that well because I don't know why, but we needed FFmpeg. The script itself was in Node. But in order to get the context menu on OS X, like basically we wanted right click, convert this to MP3 and scaffold out the show notes. So that had to be triggered in Bash. Oh no, it was an Apple script which triggered a Bash, which ran a Node.js script. So I had to get Randy to like install Homebrew and then Homebrew install FFmpeg and then install Node.js. And then there was some permissions issues, which I had never hit before. And then he needed Xcode in order to run, you know. Jeez, like it's just like, ugh. And we ended up just using straight FFmpeg. I showed him how to do it. But like, I was thinking like, man, it might have been faster to just build a little website with a drop zone and WASM, because FFmpeg has a WASM that runs in the browser, and I could simply just convert it in the browser and then allow you to click it and download it. That's the beauty of the browser, is that you can make contained, shippable applications. So I think that might have been a better idea. AppleScript itself, I have written so many AppleScripts in my day, and I always am so frustrated. There's a whole JavaScript API for writing AppleScript, and I can never get it to work properly. I never understand what to do, and you're half in this like weird GUI with things that are connected to each other, and I rather just have a Node script and have everything up and running.
Yeah, I agree. You know, one cool thing too here that you kind of briefly touched on, but you know, you could take that website that you were talking about and turn it into a app using Tori, relatively easy, because with like a Tori app, you could use, now you can do like a quick Svelte interface or a quick interface in you know, whatever you're using. And then all you're essentially doing is invoking a script in the Tori side. And that side of things is as simple as saying, invoke this, and then you can pass in the stuff that you want to run. There you go. You now have a GUI for your script that you're running, if that is something that, you know, would be helpful to the user that is going to be using it.
Another one from John Lindquist is ScriptKit. And for somebody who writes like a lot of little scripts to automate things, this is a super handy tool. Go to scriptkit.com and check it out. I don't think they have this. I really wish that instead of having to open it, it kind of has like a Raycast interface, but I really wish that it would integrate with OS X Finder. So you could simply just right click, convert, because that would, honestly, that's the ideal type of thing to be able to do it. Because whenever you're getting into Node.js scripting, then you got to like, sometimes you got to kick out to a different script, or you got to like, how do you pass a file into Node.js from a GUI? You got to tell them to like CD into a directory. So yeah. Some sort of bridge between those two things would be really neat.
Yeah, totally.
I think that's it. Like running the scripts, there's probably lots of other ways. Bash scripts is one. I always regret writing bash scripts because a little simple one, but then you want to get into concurrency or you want to loop over some files. And then before you know it, you're just like, what have I done? I wish I just had done this in Node.js. And there's even a whole bunch of different files. There's one called DAX that got released last week from the Dino folks, which is, you write it in Node.js or you write it in JavaScript, but you can run shell commands. No problem. I use another one on the Syntax website to do that as well. Let me find the name of it. It's because we have to move files from one folder to another before we deploy because of some Vercel limitation. And I use ZX. So ZX is another one from Google. And it's because you can just say $backticks and then write the bash script right inside of there, like CP or npm install, and it will go off on a trial process, run that, and then come back with the actual standard error, standard input.
And for those of you non-Canadians out there, when Wes says ZX, he doesn't mean ZEDX. It's ZX for Americans out here who know the letter Z.
I'm very proud of a lot of Canadian stuff, but the whole Z thing, it doesn't sound right, does it?
That's the one thing, yeah. Yeah, I like the metric stuff. I don't know if I like the Celsius stuff. I guess I could get behind it, but the Z stuff, can't get behind that.
No. I'll fold on that one. but that's it. Let us know what your scripts are that you've written for your coworkers and whatnot, because I love doing this type of stuff. There's automating things away, making things much easier. It's fun just to build it. Even if I'm not saving time, I'll still build a little script to automate it because it's fun for me to architect it. Certainly there's lots of people in your organization that might need a little help with that type of thing.
I mean, programming is here to do exactly this kind of stuff. And if you're the type of person who's curious and you got these types of skills, what a better use case for getting to flex some of those muscles and, you know, getting to use those superpowers of automating away with your newfound abilities to code stuff up. So this is sick. Yeah, let us know what kind of things you are automating. Leave a comment if you're watching on YouTube. Hit us up on Twitter or any of the socials. We want to hear what kind of cool stuff. And if it's open source, link us to that repo. We'd love to check it out.
All right. Peace.
Peace.